As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games.
Welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host, Tom. I'm here with Sam, as usual. Sam, I'm fighting a little bit of a cold, so if it sounds like I have a throg. A throg is an alien frog that you only find on certain planets.
A throg. Where?
In my gullet. In my gully. In my throg gully. But I hope I don't sound too terrible. I'm excited. We're finally taking on Liara. We get to talk about Liara, one of the most important characters in the games.
I'm a little daunted, to be honest, because she is so important.
Yeah,
right?
She's like the second main character. I said this on a previous episode. I feel like there's Shepard, there's Liara, and then there's everybody else. Maybe Garrus is third, you know, like...
Well, yeah. Liara's iconic to Mass Effect, and she's so important, and her fans, like people who are specifically Liara fans, we got to get this right. Otherwise, we're going to hear about it.
That's true. But we segued into this a little bit with some of our previous episode topics.
We did, yeah. We brought up Liara briefly when we were talking about Benezia. Of course, it's her mom. And, you know, last character we were actually talking about was Benezia, and she had a tragic story. So we're going to pivot to someone very close, important to her. And Liara, like we said, is also integral to the entirety of the trilogy and even makes that appearance in Mass Effect Andromeda, too.
Right, right. But first, the first place we run into her is in Mass Effect 1, right? That's the earliest lore we have. Is that correct?
It is. You know, there's some moments that she references in dialogue in later games about her childhood. But in on-screen terms, yes, that is Mass Effect 1 is the earliest in the Mass Effect timeline where she is actually seen on screen.
Okay, so where do we start with this?
Let's start with her recruitment mission when we first see her, because before we go to Therum to recruit Liara, we don't even really know about her. We know that, hey, you know, like, you know, anyway, we only see her on Therum. It takes place right after we find out about Benezia's tie to Saren. So pretty early on in the game, but it's also kind of up to us as players on how fast we want to bring Liara into the story. I've seen countless YouTube videos about, like, here's what happens if you recruit Liara after, there was some crazy one that I saw recently, like recruiting Liara after Vermeier.
Yeah, like, that's part of the fun of these games is that most people play them in a certain order, but like you can totally do things in different orders.
Right, right. So we go and meet Liar. We can choose to do this mission for her, or we could choose to do Pharos or Novaria first. But I always try to recruit her first because I want to build up my squad and have the maximum amount of time in the game with them. So I like going to Therum first. And this was, you know, the Therum mission, just as a quick side note, this was originally supposed to be a very different mission and on a different planet. It was supposed to be a mining colony on a planet named Calliston. And if Calliston sounds familiar to some of our Uber Mass Effect fans and some of the Lorecast listeners, it might be because you have sat too long idling on the Mass Effect 1 menu screen, where it then loops into one of the original trailers of Mass Effect, where Shepard and I think it's Garrus and Ashley are all standing around the CIC, and they say that there's a distress mission signal coming in from Calliston. And then they go and land on a different planet, and it's kind of trying to illustrate to you that you're going to have to make tough decisions, one of those decisions being ignoring the distress signal.
Huh. That's interesting.
And yeah. Actually, I may have conflated or confused that a little bit. I think ultimately they do decide to land on Calliston. There's some kind of computer voice that says setting course to Calliston or something like that. Anyway, that's why it might sound familiar, because Calliston in the planning phases was supposed to be this hub of sorts, and there were going to be some side missions to do. And it was similar to what we got with Pharos ultimately, but that idea of having Calliston like that was ultimately scrapped. And at the last second, instead, we got Liara's mission on the planet Therum. And that hub that I told you about, where there would be that central hub, well, they did repurpose that. That was ultimately modeled as the final fight zone for the Bring Down the Sky DLC.
That's so cool. Just to think about how different things would have been had they gone to the original plan. And yet we still have these like little bits that are left over that hint at the original version as it would have been. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. If you ever played the Bring Down the Sky DLC and you think in that final fight zone, like, man, this is a lot of space right, for just like this little so fight.
Yeah.
Where we're not really spending all that much time here. Yeah. Well, that's why. But yeah, we meet Liara on Therum, the lava planet. Everyone, if you didn't know the name Therum, then it's the lava planet. And Liara is an archaeologist, so her work is what brought her there. She tells us that she was studying a Prothean ruin, and that's what ultimately led her to her being trapped down in the mine when the Geth showed up. But it is a little bit of a damsel in distress situation. You know, I've railed against this kind of trope before.
Yeah.
Railed, probably not the right verb.
Oh no! Yeah, okay. Pushed back against.
It's a Friday.
Pushed up on? No, that would be bad too.
No.
Okay.
Criticized.
There you go.
I've criticized this trope before about the damsel in distress situation. So let's just let our listeners make up their own minds for it. Here's a little clip that we have. Let's take a listen here. The first time we meet Liara.
Are you okay? What happened to you?
Listen, this thing I'm in is a Prothean security device. I cannot move, so I need you to get me out of it, all right?
Your mother is working with Saren. Whose side are you on?
What? I am not on anybody's side. I may be Benicia's daughter, but I'm nothing like her. I have not spoken to her in years. Please, just get me out of here.
How did you end up in there?
I was exploring the ruins when the Geth showed up, so I hid in here. Can you believe that? Geth, beyond the veil! I activated the tower's defenses. I knew the barrier curtains would keep them out. When I turned it on, I must have hit something I wasn't supposed to. I was trapped in here. You must get me out, please!
The effect on her voice is pretty cool.
It's strong, yeah.
Yeah.
But what do you think of this clip? Am I being a little too hypercritical calling it damsel in distress situation?
Yeah, I mean, well, at least in this version of it, we have Fem Shep being the save. It's not male Shep showing up to save the damsel. So it's a little bit less, depending on which Shepherd you are, right? But there's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the daughter of an important character, it's kind of like a princess in a situation, right? Like, yeah, there's a little bit of that. You could draw some connections.
Well, that, I'm glad that you brought up the fact that it was FemShep. That's why I picked this clip instead of BroShep. And we know from statistics BioWare's previously released that most players decided to play as BroShep. So most players did not experience that exact clip because you're playing as BroShep. But I included it as FemShep to challenge this idea of, do we still consider it a damsel in distress situation if the gender of the player character isn't male? You know?
Yeah, but I think the damsel part depends on who's the person in distress. And the idea that it's a female looking character. I mean, you know, you can't
they're monogendered, but yes, yeah, they're feminine.
Right. It's feminine looking and she's in danger. I mean, but it's a weird thing to debate, right? Like, well, any character could be in danger. It's just a good plot point. It's an interesting way to meet somebody to help them out. Now they've owe you something maybe or whatever, right? Like, so I don't know. It doesn't hit me too strongly. There's definitely not like this romantic thing going on, at least in this part of your connection with Liara. So it's not like, oh, the princess I'm going to fall in love with that I'm fine. You know, like it doesn't kind of have that overtone really. So that makes it a little bit better, you know?
It's not like the 80s fantasy trope of like she's tied to a post and her clothes are ripped. Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, the Rapunzel up in the tower with the long flowing hair and she's so beautiful, but she's untouchable, you know, like that kind of thing. It's not really that.
Yeah. I guess I kind of thought of it in this situation because of the way that she just like she is so dependent on Shepard's help. Right. Like right. You need to help me right. out of here. Right?
Right.
Like, but whereas when we run into Garrus or Rex, you know, yeah. like they also kind of need Shepard's help, but they are portrayed as much more independent individuals off the bat anyway.
Right. Right. And I mean, I guess part of this is if I didn't know Liara's arc and how capable she is and how we see that later on, then this would rub me a little bit worse, because if she was the damsel in distress from the beginning and then she was constantly a damsel in distress, that right. would feel really bad. But in this case, it's like she just happens to need your help, and later on she can take care of herself. Like,
but you're thinking about in retrospect.
But that's the thing, is that it's in retrospect. You're right. Like, if I didn't have that information and I was playing that today, my perspective on it might be different, just coming across this for the first time.
Yeah. So and that was kind of, I'm glad that you brought up her capability, because she is extremely capable, and it doesn't take long for us to realize that she's a highly intelligent individual. And so that kind of that, I want to say, cerebral quality to how she communicates, it kind of almost gets in the way in terms of getting to know her as quickly as we can understand the kind of personality of some of our other squad mates, like Rex. You know, it doesn't take very long to understand that
Rex is not particularly complicated as an individual.
He's a very gruff individual, and we get that
simple.
Right off the bat.
Pretty, you know, simple minded, yeah.
Some very tangible color commentary. You know what I mean? That yeah. Rex offers that willy-nilly. But right. with Liara, she's very analytical. And so I picked another clip here from shortly after we recruit her and she's aboard the Normandy. You can kind of hear what I'm talking about, I think.
Too close, Commander. 10 more seconds, we would have been swimming in molten sulfur. The Normandy isn't equipped to land in exploding volcanoes. They tend to fry our sensors and melt our hull. Just for future reference.
We almost died out there, and your pilot is making jokes?
Joker pulled our asses out of there. I think he's earned the right to a few bad jokes.
I see. It must be a human thing. I don't have a lot of experience dealing with your species, Commander. But I am grateful to you. You saved my life back there, and not just from the volcano. Those Geth would have killed me or dragged me off to Saren.
What did Saren want with you? Do you know something about the conduit?
Only that it was somehow connected to the Prothean extinction. That is my real area of expertise. I have spent the past 50 years trying to figure out what happened to them.
Just how old are you exactly?
I hate to admit it, but I am only 106.
Damn! I hope I look that good when I'm your age.
A century may seem like a long time to a short-lived species like yours, but among the Asari, I am barely considered more than a child. That is why my research has not received the attention it deserves. Because of my youth, other Asari scholars tend to dismiss my theories on what happened to the Protheans.
I've got my own theory on why the Protheans disappeared.
With all due respect, Commander, I have heard every theory out there. The problem is finding evidence to support them. The Protheans left remarkably little behind. It is almost as if someone did not want the mystery solved. It is like someone came along after the Protheans were gone and cleansed the galaxy of clues. But here is the incredible part. According to my findings, the Protheans were not the first galactic civilization to mysteriously vanish. This cycle began long before them.
So I have a few thoughts in this section. First of all, the Joker joke, the joke about Joker joking, like that whole thing, that's fun. That's fun. Like, it's nice to see, you know, the meeting of species and the misunderstanding of like social etiquette and all of that. Like, that's cool. Secondly, the intensity of the dialogue with the music underlaid on like, just like, we go through these clips every week and we listen to these things. But I think there really is something about the quality of the music and the way that colors the feeling of this that creates this like warm, fuzzy, but sci-fi, but warm and fuzzy, familiar, but spacey kind of like it's done so well. I just wanted to point that out. Thirdly, Liara in this scene speaks like an intelligent person. And I don't just mean that she says smart things. I mean the way she parses her dialogue, the way she says, okay, I get what you're saying, Commander Shepard. I've heard all of the different, like, a smart person understands that there are only so many possible theories for a way a situation goes. We've been dealing with this a long time. All the greatest minds have been thinking about it. And I've heard all of those things discussed. Right. It would be like somebody saying, well, have you studied ancient philosophy? And obviously I'm a philosophy major. And like, yes, I've read all of the ancient philosophers. I know all of their thoughts. Let's go with the path that actually leads to where we think things might be revealed. There's still stuff missing here. Let's talk about that part specifically. You know, like, let's not waste our time like pulling out our measuring sticks and talking about all these different theories. Let's get to the point, because I know that you know that. You know that I know that now. Let's move on, right? Like,
yeah, I love the fact that while being incredibly polite, Liara effectively undresses the commander with the commander saying, well, I got my own theory, right?
Right.
And Liara's like, you know, in all due respect, I heard it all before. Please let's not relive this,
right,
you know?
Right. And on top of it, it's almost like this weird flex about how old she is. And everybody responds about, you know, oh, I wish I looked that good when I'm 100 or whatever. But like, she's establishing like who she is in her own species, but who she is compared to humans as being somebody who is much older than all of them, but yet still considered young, highly intelligent, but still open to trying to understand things better because there are things that she doesn't understand. Like, she's treading this very interesting balance of all of these things, which make her both seem extremely capable, but also vulnerable at the same time.
Yes. And talking about her youth, she said, because of my youth, my research is not taken as, seriously as it should be.
Right.
And A, we can glean that that's a source of frustration for her. But B, how many times have we talked about that on this show where, you know, it's incredibly frustrating being young and in a job where you see what's going on, you know how to fix things, mm-hmm. and no one listens to you for the simple fact that you are young.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's a very real thing that a lot of people can identify with. I mean, you and I have dealt with that in our own careers and things. She's a very well-written character. Like, there's a reason why I think people really like her, is that she's three-dimensional.
Yes. To push back on that part a little bit, though, I do think that, and it's not the voice actor's fault, it isn't, you know, because I think she's intentionally written this way, but Liara is a little bit robotic and aloof, and it's just a byproduct of her cerebral quality, like I was telling you about, you know?
Yeah, I think there's
she's not as emotional as Rex.
Right, there is some of that with Liara, but I think in general in the first game, and maybe people are going to at me, don't at me on this, I think the voice acting improves as the series goes on, as the voice actors get more and more comfortable with their characters, as the writers write better dialogue for the characters. I find in general, Mass Effect 1 has the most stilted dialogue. That it kind of has kind of a robotic quality just in and of itself. But I get what you're saying.
But, you know, we later learn that she has effectively hold up and put herself in these situations where she's alone for much of her life. Because she's 106, right? But she has been studying the Protheans for decades, and she's been doing so largely alone. And we know that she's bookish. We know that she likes to be alone. But I also think that in that clip, her lack of socializing with other races really comes through.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, she's even though she's over 100 years old, she still seems very new to very specific kinds of things. And that's okay. Like, she's used to being young among her own species. And so that's okay. Right. And I think this is a mentality that smart people in general should try to adopt, especially as they get older. It's just, you know, like, try to still be open to new things. Try to still be aware when you don't happen to hold the authority or the knowledge of that specific thing in that specific conversation or situation, right? Like, trying to balance that. And in this situation, she comes across as pretty balanced in both directions.
Yeah. And in that realm, I think that she's almost a counter perspective for the player. You know, we've talked about how we think that Shepard was chosen as a human, and player characters have only been human in Mass Effect because they provide that referential window through which to view the rest of the galaxy. Well, I think here we're seeing that Liara is like the mirror. She's the counter window with the alien who has not really interacted with many other who she would call aliens before. And we pick that up with her missing social cues, you know, her doing other things that she just finds nouveau, you know, from other alien races. And I think that she's also, how much plot was just given to us in that little excerpt from Liara? It was a ton of plot, right, about the Protheans, the Reapers. She's a convenient medium, I think, for the writers to convey very critical plot points and somewhat hold the player's hand in the beginning stages of the game, guiding them through the narrative.
Right. And to speed up the humans' understanding of what's actually going on, because they're the new people here. Right. But she's like, no, we've been trying to figure this out for a while. Like, let me get you up to speed. And then we, like you're saying, as the person playing the game, as the spectator, are also brought up to speed. We're like, okay, we're catching up with the rest of the galaxy here, while she catches up on, oh, this is what humans are like.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this is a trend that transcends Mass Effect. There's other characters in other series that are very much the voice of the writers speaking to you directly, player.
It's very, very common. And this whole scene of like the flip side thing, the mirror side of like the alien getting used to the humans. I mean, how many times does that happen in like Star Trek, you know, or series like that, which obviously Mass Effect pulls a lot from. So,
yeah. And speaking of, you know, Mass Effect pulling from other sci-fi tropes, we should address before we go any further, and I think we talked about it in the Asari episode, but just as a reminder, that the original design of the Asari, it was stated by one of the game developers that they were made to almost emulate the stereotypical sexy blue alien girl. And
like from B movies, like old sci-fi films, and like where they just paint the person's skin and then they just put them in like scantily clad space garb, like from like the 60s and 70s. Yeah.
Talk about things that aged like milk curdling in your mouth. But yeah, that is, you know, obviously pertinent to Liara, because many characters in this game, I'm actually not sure if this applies to Liara directly, but many alien characters in this game, the alien squad mate or the alien who was of that race, the closest person to Shepard, they were designed first, and then the rest of the race was designed around them, like what they looked like.
Right.
So,
well, at least it's flipped on its head, because like, although what you were saying before, she starts out as like a damsel in distress, but we very quickly find out that she's capable, she's smart, she's like, she is a person standing on her own feet. So she may look like sexy blue alien damsel in distress at the beginning, but at least she doesn't stay that way.
No, she doesn't. And I think that she becomes such an NPC, like an essential NPC. If you're a Bethesda player, you know that phrase, essential NPC, unkillable. Technically, Liara is killable by the end of Mass Effect 3, but you can't before then. Like, there's no way. She's essential, right? And she has this essential NPC vibe about her, unlike most other squad mates. Maybe not readily apparent in Mass Effect 1, but over the course of the trilogy, I think it becomes more and more obvious. For example, there's a moment moment where after we find out that Cerberus was using Rachni in Mass Effect 1, Liara says something like, Cerberus might be a bigger problem than we once realized. Whether the plan for the writers of Mass Effect was to always have Cerberus grow in importance, I think it's evident that the writers were laying the threads in Mass Effect 1 through Liara, and Liara is it once again hinting.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And yeah, whether they knew or not, it was good to plant that seed just in case they were going to expand on that. Plus, it makes her seem like a smart character who can kind of predict where things might go. She's got a, she really got a grasp of like what's going on.
Yeah, highly intelligent, laying that seed back in Mass Effect 1 about Cerberus. And I know that a lot about Cerberus was retconned later after the fact. People don't need to at me about that. But, you know, not every seed that was laid for future narrative growth actually sprouted. In fact, the most notable one is the dark energy plotline in Mass Effect 2. Mm-hmm. That one didn't actually sprout to where it may have gone otherwise.
Right, but maybe in the next Mass Effect. Sometimes it's fun to pull those other threads back out and be like, hey, you remember this? So
maybe.
All right. Well, this is going to be a double episode. There's a lot to talk about with Liara in Mass Effect 1. So why don't we take a quick break and go thank our patrons, and then we'll continue on with her story.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. Thank you so much for your support to all of our patrons and everybody listening. If you're just listening and hanging out, if you're here in the chat, thank you. Thank you for being here. And we have to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Ed Boy, Kiracy, and Lieutenant Tosino. Thank you for supporting us on the Patreon, and to all 60 of our current patrons. Thank you for the support as well. If you are interested in checking out what you can get, like stickers and t-shirts, ad-free episodes, joining us on Patreon chats, all sorts of fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. Go check it all out. Also, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's a great way to get your words on the show. We'll read that out on a future episode. And you can also rate the show 5 stars on Spotify. That would be awesome. Or whatever podcatcher you listen to this on. Plus, you can tell your friends, all of that stuff. We can't do this without you. And because of you, we've been able to keep this going for years now. So thank you so much. All right, let's move on with the rest of the discussion about Liara.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right, Sam. So moving on, we have another clip here. What's this?
That's right. So I wanted to go a little bit more into depth about Liara's dialogue and how she portrays herself in Mass Effect 1 before anyone jumps down our throat and say, oh, come on, guys, it's just one, you know, 1 minute clip that we talked about before. Well, we have another clip here where she is talking more about the Protheans and other plot points. But why don't we go ahead and listen to it and we'll dissect it after the fact.
Interesting is what I did not turn up. There is remarkably little archaeological evidence of the Protheans, and even less that might explain why they disappeared. It is almost as if someone did not want the mystery solved. It is like someone came along after the Protheans were gone and cleansed the galaxy of clues. But here is the incredible part. According to my findings, the Protheans were not the first galactic civilization to mysteriously vanish. This cycle began long before them.
Where do you come up with this theory? I thought there wasn't any evidence.
I have been working on this for 50 years. I have tracked down every scrap and shred of evidence. Eventually, subtle patterns start to emerge, patterns that hint at the truth. It is difficult to explain to someone else. I cannot point to one specific thing to prove my case. It is more a feeling derived from a half century of dedicated research. But I know I'm right, and eventually I will be able to prove it. There were other civilizations before the Protheans. This cycle has repeated itself many times over.
If the Protheans weren't the first, then who was?
I don't know. There is barely any evidence on the Protheans, even less on those who came before them. I cannot prove my theory, but I know I am right. The galaxy is built on a cycle of extinction. Each time a great civilization rises up, it is suddenly and violently cast down. Only ruins survive. The Protheans rose up from a single world until their empire spanned the entire galaxy. Yet even they climbed to the top on the remains of those who came before. Their greatest achievements, the mass relays and the Citadel, are based on the technology of those who came before them. And then, like all the other forgotten civilizations throughout galactic history, the Protheans disappeared. I have dedicated my life to figuring out why.
I love the story time with Liara.
Yes, right? That's I probably jumped the gun a little bit when I was talking about it earlier, but that's what I was talking about. You know, more vital exposition on the Protheans given to us from the writers by way of Liara.
Right. Yeah, she is the voice of the writers at this point.
Yes, plot points, intriguing details, definitely, that lead us to ultimately realize that it was the Reapers behind it. And yet Liara seems to have much of this already figured out. And I found it interesting how absolutely certain she is about her conclusions and her theories.
And we're so willing to believe her at this point. That's the other thing is that, like, I don't know about everybody else, but when I watch this, when I play through this part, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the truth. This is the truth. Liara speaking the truth, right? Like, somehow I'm just like, yeah, no, these are facts. I don't have any questions about this.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of unreliable narration at this point in Mass Effect 1. So I think we've already been primed to kind of trust what these key figures in the game are telling us. And she seems so sure about it. But I found that to be interesting, especially because she seems to have the mind of a scientist, right?
Yeah.
But the mind of a scientist would dictate that you're trying to prove yourself wrong, actually.
Right. You're maintaining skepticism until you have enough solid evidence to say, okay, this is the thing that's most likely. Yeah.
But then again, if you've spent 50 years trying to prove yourself wrong and you haven't been able to, maybe you would be that sure.
Well, and that's the other. I mean, she's not human, but the human side of that is even though you as a scientist, you may remain skeptical and be open to new information that will update those things. On some level, you're just going to say, OK, this is kind of what I think is actually going on. Like, if I was a betting person, I would say this is probably what's likely. And that may be wrong. You might be proved wrong later and have to change that opinion. But most people at least carry some sort of opinion, including scientists.
Yeah. Yeah. And side note after that, and this next, like right after this, she does her whole like, oh, my stars, Southern Belle routine, because someone asks, when's the last time, I think it was Caden, when's the last time you ate or slept? And because she goes something like, oh, and like almost faints from exhaustion mid-sentence. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's not the only time in the game that happens either. But for some reason, I don't know why that particular part always like annoyed me, because it felt so forced, I guess.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, it's like the whole, is she the damsel in distress? Is she weak in a wilting flower? Or is she a capable, smart individual who can stand on her feet? Like, we're getting mixed signals back and forth.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I am intrigued by this story. When I hear Liara talking about the Protheans and the Reapers, I'm very, very intrigued by the story, because like you said, I take it to be the truth. But I'm not so intrigued by Liara herself, personally.
Mm-hmm.
At least at this point in the game, when I'm playing through, I'm putting myself in the perspective of when I first played through this game.
Is it because of the robotic delivery? Is it like...
Maybe. Again, I know the voice actors were just following direction. They always do. And they do this through multiple takes. Mm-hmm. But it's the writing, too, of what Liara is talking about. You know, we've now heard her talk for, I think the clips combined are about 3 minutes, right? 3 minutes and
yeah,
some three, change.
4 minutes, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And how much of who Liara is do we know?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, there's not a whole lot of personal stuff revealed, but that still plays into her character. Like, there are certain things she's very guarded about, and the other things that she's very much going to tell you. And I feel like that's true to her character through the series.
It is. Yes, definitely. And that is her character. We grow to learn this. You know, I think it's easy. I think the story, it doesn't tell me much of who Liara is, but I also think that it's easy to grow tired of the Liara has the inside track on the writer's mindset. You know, the Liara special girl treatment that some might call and some might perceive her as having gotten from the writers. So I think if some players out there do feel like that, I understand, but I also understand that Liara plays this crucial role for the player, and that we do learn more about who she is as a person if you want to.
Yeah, and I feel like that was part of the mentality of the way they designed the games. This idea of, like, if you just want to mainline the main quest and get through the game in, like, 12 hours or however long that takes, you can do that. But if you want to get to know these other characters and maybe romance some of them, then you can do that too. It's like, we have to go back like, what, 15 years at this point, longer than that, 17 years, whenever this game actually came out. It was almost 2 decades ago now.
2007. So yeah, 17 years.
You have to think about what they were doing. They were trying to make something that would appeal to lots of different people, including people who hadn't played role-playing games before. They didn't want it to be too character heavy, but they wanted to have good characters. They wanted people who wanted to run and gun and get through the main story, because it was a shooter, right? But they also wanted you to be able to get to know the characters. So they had to, there's like this, from a meta analysis for the designers, there's kind of this weird balance in that. Like, had this section of the game taken twice as long and we got more personal stuff about her, we may not have cared yet, because we were Shepard. We're supposed to be saving the galaxy and doing the important things. And the characters grow on us in a secondary sort of way. So I can see why they would have designed it like that. But you're saying you would have preferred maybe to have more personal stuff from her earlier?
Maybe, you know, but I think that you raise a great point about pacing, because the original one sheet for Mass Effect did describe it as Jack Bauer in space.
Right.
So, yeah. So it was first and foremost that kind of pacing. But I guess if I had things the way that I wanted them to be, or at least the way that I say I want them to be, right, then it would have been more akin to Act One of Baldur's Gate.
Yes. And I think that's a perfect example, because RPGs have evolved, and Baldur's Gate is pulling from this Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, Dungeons and Dragons, and then other advancements in RPGs over the years, whereas Mass Effect 1 was setting itself first and foremost as like, oh, you play a Call of Duty, then you'll like shooting these aliens in space. But also there's a really cool story and other cool characters to get to know if you want to do that stuff too. So
yes, yeah. And again, I don't want to shortchange Liara because she does open up. We do learn more about her. Like I said, with a little asterisk, it's if you want to. So assuming that you are one of those players and you never got to know her, well, here's something new for you. Here's a clip from Shepard stopping by to talk with Liara after recruiting her.
Tell me about yourself, Liara.
Me? I am afraid I am not very interesting, Commander. I spend most of my time on remote digs, unearthing mundane items buried in long-forgotten Prothean ruins.
Sounds dangerous and lonely.
Sometimes I would run afoul of indigenous life forms or stumble across a small band of mercenaries or privateers, but I was always careful. Until the Geth followed me to Artemis Tau, I never found myself in any situation my biotics could not handle. As for the solitude, well, that is one aspect that most appealed to me. Sometimes I just need to get away from other people.
You don't like other people?
I suppose it comes from being a matriarch's daughter. People expected me to follow in Benezia's footsteps. They wanted me to become a leader of our people. Matriarchs guide their followers into the future. They seek the truth of what is yet to come. Maybe that's why I became so interested in the secrets of the past.
All right, so let's pause here. This is a longer clip.
Yes.
I think there's some interesting things happening in the scene with the creating the beginning of her character arc. We're referencing a character in reference to another important character that we've already met. We see that she feels like she's trying to understand who she is and why she is a certain way, and that she's been kind of pigeonholed in these specific aspects, culturally, as Benezia's daughter, as an archaeologist. Like we're seeing the constraints, right? And in character writing, that means that those constraints are going to be broken or pushed up against in order for the character to grow and create some sort of arc where they end up in a different location than where they started. So it's pretty neat that it's so explicitly set up right here. It's like, this is like writing 101. That's what the scene is.
She is the kind of self-identity uncertainty that you would expect from someone maybe in their, you know, late teenage years or early 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because it stands in stark contrast to the wealth of knowledge that she has from archaeology and studying that for 50 years. You know, there's the crystallized knowledge, and then there's the, what other kind of knowledge is it?
It's, yeah, I don't remember specific words. They fall out of my brain. But yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. She doesn't seem to have that crystalline, I think it's called crystalline knowledge that you obtain after, you know, just sheer byproduct of aging, becoming more wise about and more certain about who you are and who you are in the world and that kind of thing. She doesn't have that yet because she is, for her race, still quite young.
Right.
But she is incredibly educated and intelligent in her respective career field.
Yeah. She has so much knowledge about these specific things, and yet so much naivete about who she is in the scope of it all. So it's this really cool dynamic because it's both at the same time. But here, let's continue the clip. There's a little bit more to this one.
It sounds so foolish when I say it out loud. It sounds like I became an archaeologist simply to spite Benezia.
All children rebel against their parents. It's a natural part of growing up.
Uh-huh. You share the wisdom of the matriarch, Shepard. That is exactly what Benezia said when I told her of my decision. But there was more to it than that. I felt drawn to the past. The Protheans were these wondrous, mysterious figures. I wanted to know everything about them. That is why I find you so fascinating. You were marked by the beacon on Eden Prime. You were touched by working Prothean technology.
Sounds like you want to dissect me in a lab somewhere.
What? No, I did not mean to insinuate. I never meant to offend you, Shepard. I only meant that you would be an interesting specimen for an in-depth study. No, that's even worse.
Calm down, Liara. I was only joking.
Joking? Oh, by the goddess, how could I be so dense? You must think I am a complete and utter fool.
So two things here. First of all, I really like how Shepard has a moment of being able to convey wisdom to somebody who she's only a fraction the age of. That's pretty cool. But secondly, the end of the dialogue where the confusion about the joke or misunderstanding, about, like, that totally feels like anime dialogue to me.
Oh, it does. Doesn't it? Yeah, you're right.
It feels like, oh no, oh gosh, I'm so embarrassed. How could I have said such a thing? Oh, don't worry. That's not what I actually meant. Let's still be friends. Ha ha, okay. You know,
tee.
Tee.
I've embarrassed myself in front of Shepard Senpai.
Right. That's yeah, totally, exactly. It totally feels like that. And I don't know. But yeah.
But yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier about, like, I think this is evidence that Liara has been under socialized, you know, like she clearly has not spent enough time around other races and other people, that she often says things that even she admits, you know, she's like open mouth, insert foot. Right. And then she gets embarrassed or doesn't pick up on a joke. And if this is kind of like, If you are listening to this and you're like, oh my God, I think I'm like that. Like, yeah, it's common. Like, you know,
right. Well, I mean, it's also a trait of people with certain neurodivergences. This idea that, like,
yes, that
they
too.
Just don't socialize as well, but they can be very, very intelligent and very capable at certain other things. So she comes across as somebody who might be a little autistic or, you know, maybe something else that makes her slightly different than the average character that you come across, which is pretty cool because I'm sure a lot of people can identify with that.
If Liara is canonically on the autism spectrum, then that's news to me. I haven't seen any confirmation of that, but we do know that, like, that other characters in the Mass Effect universe are on the autism spectrum, namely Jillian Grayson.
She's also an alien, so maybe that doesn't work the same way. Maybe all of the Asari are in some ways a little bit more like that, and that's normal for them. So
I don't know. I mean, Counselor Tevos is different, right? Counselor, but then again, she's a politician, so it's her job to be a good communicator. So I don't know. I feel like this level of kind of awkward clumsiness is unique to Liara in terms of all the Asari that we meet. And by the way, if you think that got awkward, then just try and talk with her about Asari mating rituals because she's so clinical about it. She's so clinical about it.
Right. It's the scientific version of the thing. Yeah.
Right. And this is kind of overall what I'm saying, that at the very beginning of Mass Effect 1, at least, she gives all this factual information. If you ask her a question, you know, and even on topics that are ripe for colorful remarks that you would definitely get if you asked Tally or Garrus or Rex or Caden or Ashley about them. But she abstains from making most colorful remarks. She's in some ways in this part of Mass Effect 1, she's almost like a computer. You enter an inquiry into a computer and it gives you an answer.
Right. And it's not ready for you to make a joke.
Like, but it doesn't tell you how it feels about the answer.
Right. Okay. So before we get to the end of the episode, is there any other dialogue about her mother and her family, her opening up about any of that kind of thing?
Yeah. And, you know, this is a topic that one would guess you'd kind of have to open up about, right? And so I do want to play this little bit about when we're talking with Liara about Benezia.
Term. Sometimes an Asari and her partner will stay together for many decades.
Do you know who Matriarch Benezia chose as her partner?
She rarely spoke of her partner. Though I know my father, if you want to use that term, was another Asari.
Benezia never told you her partner's name?
Union with her own kind is no longer common. Not for the purposes of reproduction. Most Asari believe it weakens our species. Asari daughters inherit racial traits from the father species. If both parents are Asari, then nothing has been gained, or so conventional wisdom would hold. I am what is sometimes called a pureblood, though no Asari would ever be cruel enough to say the word to my face. It is a great insult among my people. It is possible Benezia's partner was embarrassed by their union. She may have been too ashamed to publicly acknowledge me as her offspring.
So we've talked about the stilted dialogue and how she's robotic. And part of what makes the voice acting in this part particularly interesting to me, and I feel like high quality, is that it's tinged with feeling while still remaining robotic. Like there's emotion underlying it, but the character hasn't changed.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I wanted to include this part.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, we're talking about opening up. How can we get Liara to open up? And you do see some of that highly cerebral, analytical facade. I don't want to call it a facade because that implies.
The words she's choosing are still analytical and careful and specific, but the feeling underneath those words betrays the emotion that they hold.
Well put. It's
without
clinical,
her saying emotional words.
For example, she refers to her father as Benezia's partner at one point, when she could have just said my father. But that could also be because, you know, we later learn that Athida, her father, was never around. So maybe she doesn't feel right referring to this person as her father, or even though the definition of father is unique to our dual gendered or multigendered species. You know what I mean? Like it's a monogendered species for Asari. So maybe just even saying like my father would be a weird thing for Liara to feel like saying, but even still referring to it as Benezia's partner feels clinical.
Right. Well, she's explained like father has multiple inherent meanings inside of it, right? Like your parents in general. She's referring to this is my genetic progenitor on the opposite side of my mother, but she's not saying this is my emotional parent. She's withholding that part from the definition by the way she delivers it. And it's like she's cleaved the word father in half. In a way.
Right. Yeah. And we can still glean, you know, from this that her family is a sore topic and that she comes from a broken home, even if she doesn't call it that. You know, she doesn't call it that, but it is a broken home. She admits that her father, quote unquote father, was never around, and that she clearly has some issues with her mom and living in her mother's shadow. Right. And she ran. She essentially ran away from home to dive and put herself into her work full time. So, yeah, I think Liara is someone that we can view as having come from a broken home, but is still highly intelligent, very capable. Though there are some moments in dialogue that would seem to, you know, contradict that at least. But you can still tell that she's close to her mom too. And I think this is important, especially for what happens later in Mass Effect. Despite these huge expectations that she says come from being the matriarch Benezia's daughter. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So she's still close with her mom, but it's a nuanced topic because, naturally some level of resentment may come from having an extremely prestigious parent.
Yeah. Yeah. And this isn't where her story ends in Mass Effect 1. We're splitting this into two episodes in order to give as much detail as possible and really consider things deeply. So this is only about half of the story for Mass Effect 1. We'll continue that next week. So thank you for tuning in. But Sam, I know you've got some fun news about a convention you're going to. Do you want to share that before we head out?
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to be at Emerald City Comic Con this weekend. We're recording this on Friday, March 1st. And so the convention is going on right now. And in fact, as soon as I'm done here, I'm going to get changed and I'm going to head over to the convention. And if you're around the Seattle area and you're going to be at Emerald City Con, don't hesitate to reach out to me, you know, on Twitter or, you know, on the Discord and say, hey, you know, I'm going to be at Comic Con. Let's meet up. And I'd love to be able to meet some of you guys. So let me know if you're at Comic-Con and maybe we can meet up, and I'll be wearing an N7 shirt. I have like a ton of them. So, you know, go figure. But I will also be trying to stream at some point this weekend, continuing my personal canon playthrough of Shepard. And of course, my handle on pretty much every social media that I have is N7 The Legend.
Awesome. Well, I hope you have a blast. I hope some people out there are able to meet up with you and get to hang out. And that sounds fun. It's been a long time since I've been to a big convention like that. So I'm sure it'll be lots of fun. I'm sure you're going to see lots of people like dressed up as cool stuff and like some really cool, I don't know, voice actors, writers, like people to get.
It always makes me wish that I did Mass Effect cosplay, but I don't have like the time or the money
to do that. Yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah.
I'm always floored by some of the things that people can do, because it really is a skill that I don't have, especially when they make the outfits themselves and stuff. It's very cool stuff. So I hope you have a blast. Thank you for tuning in. Of course, you can check out my other stuff as well, robotsradio.net, for my other shows, Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the Fallout Lorecast, Elder Scrolls Lorecast, and Starfield Lorecast. Their names just fall out of my head. Go check that stuff out. Check out the other shows. Lots of other hosts doing lots of cool stuff at robotsradio.net. Oh, and I've been working on some new t-shirts on the merch store. It's just kind of a side thing. Like, t-shirts don't make a lot of money. Like, that is not the main source of income by any means. But I'd rather get them up there and try to price them as best I can in order to just give people some fun stuff if they want some fun shirts designed around some of the shows. So go check that out as well at robotsradio.net. All right. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And we will continue Liara's story. Words are hard. I need to get over this cold next week. See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.